another full-on week of tennis and another title for Daniil Medvedev. Baza, it is amazing what this guy has put together. That's six tournaments in a row now where he's reached at least the final, and he's picked up another title. He's almost up to 60 wins for the year. Just stunning how he is proving to be currently the best player on form in the men's game.
It is amazing, Barry. And actually, I was commentating for ATP Tennis Radio, and we had a bit of a debate. And not for the first time, Barry, I disagreed. But it's a very good talking about. I mean, first of all, what an amazing time it is for Medvedev. And, you know, he's sort of cutting through the draw. And so much of the talk during the American hard court summer was Medvedev's tired, Medvedev's tired. You know, how long can he keep this run going? But actually, when you look at it, he's winning matches without dropping sets. The final today was 73 minutes. So physically, I think he's got a lot left. Mentally, normally you'd say, well, he's played a lot of tennis, but you never feel as tired when you're winning. And life is easy when you're winning. And life is very difficult at the moment, whoever plays Medvedev. And that was apparent, really. And I think the body language, when both players walked out, Medvedev looked relaxed. It looked like another match for Medvedev, where Zverev gave the impression this was huge. I think he had more to lose, Zverev, because of the positions he was in. He started slowly, and Medvedev just makes life difficult. He's such an awkward customer, such a clever player, and thoroughly deserved to win as comfortably as he did.
He dropped from what 16 at the start of the year down briefly to number 19 in the world, but now he really is right up there, mixing it with the very best that we've had in the sport for many a year. And it seems that nothing fazes him. It is incredible, though. But what do you think it is about his game that has now made him this player who they're all finding so difficult to face? Because Zverev came into that match having won all their previous encounters, and he's not the first one to have faced him. I think, was it Coric in St. Petersburg, who was in a similar position, but gets duffed up for the loss of what, four or five games?
Yeah, and I'm a big believer in reading, looking at head-to-heads, and because generally there is a reason why a certain player might dominate. But for me, before the final, that was irrelevant because that was pre-Medvedev becoming the Russian beast as he is now. The question you asked me, I think this is a really good talking point. When I first saw him, Medvedev reminded me of Murray. And the reason he reminded me of Murray was because of his will to win, his competitive edge on a court, his intelligence. But also at times he would play quite a long way back behind the baseline. And now I feel that there's a bit of Murray in him. There's a bit of Djokovic in him because of the intensity that he has, his willingness to step up on the baseline and also change direction. And there's a bit of Federer in him as well because he's got a great serve, and we should not underestimate the value of that first serve, also the value of the second serve, as we saw in Cincinnati, his willingness to go big on the second serve. But the variation, and this is for me, I think he's showing the way. And one of the reasons why the top four, you know, we still include Murray, that they've dominated the sport for a decade is because they're great players, obviously. But the second tier, as good as they've been, I think they are predictable, Barry. That there's nothing in there at times in their play that you would say is going to surprise the very big guys. But Medvedev absolutely has that. And a couple of occasions sort of springs to mind. Fognini in the second set, 5-4 in the second set tiebreak, second serve, what's he do? He served in volleys. And Fognini exploded because Fognini didn't expect it. And there were a couple of occasions today as well against Zverev. Serve and volley, second serve out of nowhere. You feel at times you're rallying from the back, and then all of a sudden change the pace and a winner. And I think it's that extra few layers to his game that has really is the reason that he has made the strides that he has.
It's amazing to watch a guy who is the height he is. He's a bit sort of gangly still, isn't he, in the way that he moves around the court, and yet how brilliantly he does move. As you say, he's come up the court, I think, more now, and he's able to, certainly against Zverev in the final, was able to push him back deep, which we know is a problem area at times for Sasha, as well as he had played in the week against others to get to that final. But just the way that the Russian with his flat hit gets so much back. And he referenced one of his coaches, I think, when he was a kid, who had said to him, it's something that has stayed with him throughout, that if you get one more ball back than your opponent, you're likely to win the match. And it's so true. And he seems to get just so much back that you think, how does he do that? And even when he's put under pressure, the passes he's producing from the corners are sensational.
Yeah, they are. He's got great hands. The back end is a thing of beauty. And what you're saying about putting one ball back, I mean, the sport is simple. But you've also got to have, you've got to have shots, and you've got to have the ability to be able to win points and hit winners, but recognize at times putting the ball in the court with length. And I think, you know, going back is, going with length is important, but going back to his game and where, what Djokovic has mastered, and, you know, we've talked about it, haven't we, Barry, numerous times. What Djokovic has mastered is the ability to be able to play aggressive tennis, but play the percentages. You know, do you remember the time when Murray sort of had a go at the press saying, you guys want me to play aggressive? You know, what is aggressive? Yes. You know, aggressive doesn't mean standing on the baseline and teeing off and making one and missing five. I've always defined aggressive tennis as exactly, you know, what I said about Djokovic and what Medvedev does and what Nadal does and what Federer does. If you look at those guys, all those guys on the biggest moments, and Murray as well, on the biggest moments, they play the percentage game. They'll play aggressive, but they'll go for the right shot. They won't overcomplicate it. And it's attention to detail that's able to keep this incredible journey going. And mentally, he shows at the moment no signs of stopping. Just going back to what I said at the start, where we disagree, and I'd love to hear your thoughts. Is he the best player in the world right now? I said no, because for me, it's Nadal and Djokovic. And the reason I said Nadal and Djokovic is because you look, the four biggest tournaments that we have are the majors. And Nadal's won two and Djokovic has won two. The most recent, Nadal won, beating Medvedev in the final. Nadal beat Medvedev in Montreal. Djokovic won Wimbledon. I mean, it's a great talking point. And there will be some that say, yes, it's Medvedev because he's won here in Shanghai and he's won in St. Petersburg and he won in Cincinnati. I guess the next few weeks will also tell us a little bit more, because the ATP Finals is the last big tournament of the year.
Yes, you could say, well, you're only as good as your last match. And boy, was his last match. In fact, his last couple of tournaments have been sensational. I think you could say that he is certainly the most consistent player currently. Does he mal the match Rafa when Rafa did what he did to him in New York? Well, that I suppose you can't say that, but ultimately that's just sort of opinions, isn't it? On a level that we've all got to admire as being absolutely breathtaking in what he has achieved this year. I was going to pick up the point of Zverev saying after the match that because Daniil is playing so flat and because he's a different player now to the one that, you know, I faced earlier, but he says that his shots, you can't really do anything with the ball. He feels that they're coming through kind of so true, so flat that does it take time away? Is that the difficulty that others are finding?
I look at the players that have worried Medvedev and have beaten Medvedev in the recent months. Kyrgios in Washington. I mean, what Kyrgios did, Kyrgios serve and volleyed a lot. And Kyrgios took Medvedev out of rhythm early on in the point. Even this week, his toughest match, and I know it was early in the week, but it was against Pospisil. Pospisil serve and volleyed. Pospisil took Medvedev out of the rhythm. If you allow Medvedev the luxury, maybe luxury is not the right word, but if you allow Medvedev the chance to be able to build his rallies, the way he's so confident at the moment that ultimately I think he's just going to be able to grind you down. And that's how I saw it today with Zverev. It was a totally different match for Sasha today than it was against Federer on Friday and it was against Berrettini yesterday. It was short rallies. I think against Berrettini, they might have had, off the top of my head, I wrote it down somewhere, all my bits of paper, that it's, I think against Federer, it was maybe 12 or 13 rallies over 9 shots. I think against Berrettini, it might have been 7 over 9 shots. I mean, in the first 5 games, there was double figures in terms of long rallies. So
in the final.
Yeah, it was a totally different match. The average rally length was 7 to 8 shots. And that you know, he can play short and beat you in short rallies, but I think he definitely comes into his own in the longer rallies, Medvedev.
He has such a rich mixture, really, doesn't he? And I feel that it goes back to his character. He's a mischief maker, both in terms of the way he likes to wind up a crowd, the way he behaved at times and reacted with the crowd, but ultimately won everybody over pretty much in New York. But also the kind of mischief he can create with those different styles of game that you've gone through, and the ability to spring surprises, to not allow players to settle. If he's into a rally, well, he's patient enough, he's confident enough in his own abilities to last the course and invariably come out on top. So it's just a magnificent spectacle at the moment to see what this guy is continuing to do.
Yep. He's winning the big matches, he's winning the big moments, he's won 11 tie breaks in a row. As you said, he's won six. He's now got six finals in a row. I loved his comment when they asked him after the match yesterday, you're now in the sixth final. What would it mean to get to Federer and Djokovic's 17? And there was a sort of a moment's pause. It was like, 17? Really? He didn't know. I mean that is extraordinary, isn't it? What Federer and Djokovic did, Djokovic a few years ago, and Federer back in 2005, 2006.
Indeed. Well, talking of those two, what would you assess of what they did or weren't able to do in Shanghai over the past week?
I thought Djokovic continued, certainly early on in the week, was continuing his fine form in Tokyo, was up a set against Tsitsipas. Djokovic he didn't quite reach the level that he would have wanted, but I think praise has to go to Tsitsipas. I think it's great, Barry, now he's back to where he was at the beginning of the year. He's back playing that type of tennis. It was sort of a rough mid-season for him. I actually think it's understandable. We talked about it, didn't we? I think it was last week on the pod. What Stefanos had to go through. So he's back. As for Federer, I felt half a step slow this week. I felt exactly the same almost last year in Shanghai when Coric overpowered him. Zverev overpowered him in the quarterfinals. I mean, Federer did amazing to recover and win the second set, given the fact that Zverev was serving 6-5, 40-love, and Federer just played an incredible game to break back. He played an incredible tiebreak. Is this the end? For me, I don't want to get drawn in on that because, as I said, it was the same 12 months ago, and we know what a great start to the year Federer had. I just think at the end of the year now, it's becoming harder and harder for him because the big tournament, when I say the big tournament, I mean, he'd love to win Basel and he'd love to win Paris and he'd love to win the ATP finals, but he's not, I don't think he's playing now because he wants to win necessarily Basel and Shanghai. The majors are the pinnacle for him, and he knows he needs to play events to be able to be in the best shape, to be able to play his best tennis at the majors. But I saw signs this week that I'm not so sure everything was right. I don't know if he's 100% physically. You know, we know he had problems in New York. It didn't look like he was serving as well as he has, and it didn't look like, especially on the back end at times, he wasn't able to get his feet in the right place, which is so unusual of Federer.
Watching what I did of him in that match with Zverev, there were some moments that time when he saved the set points and clinched that second set was truly breathtaking. And I think you could sort of pin a few of those points right up there with some of the very best we have ever seen from Roger Federer. But ultimately, the match went from him. The final set went away. And I do wonder, Barry, whether you'd agree with this, that only he will know really how much that Wimbledon result ultimately sort of hurt him mentally, emotionally. But since then, when push has come to shove, okay, he perhaps wasn't ready really taking on an informed Rublev in Cincy. Then for Grigor, who was, down a set against him twice in that match in New York, ultimately it got away from him. And now another one has. And I just wonder whether that is a legacy, ultimately, of Wimbledon in the final against
Djokovic. You might have a point. I think that might be very close to the mark. Again, totally understandable. Because he was you know, the two championship points. I'm sure there at times he will wake up even now and have few regrets on what he did on those two championship points. But it's tennis, isn't it? I mean, Federer has done unbelievably well to be able to put disappointments behind him and bounce back. I still think he will. I still think he'll be back next year playing great tennis. I just have my doubts that we're going to see the best of him from now until the end of the year when I look at how he has been in the last couple of years. Do you remember 2017, that match against Goffin in London?
Yes.
He wasn't right then. I don't think he was right last year. I know he won Basel, but I watched his tennis throughout that week in Basel. I didn't think he played particularly well. I mean, I'd probably be generous if I gave him a 7 out of 10 throughout the week. So I think for Federer, this is now going to be very difficult for the rest of the year. I think we'll get a better gauge come January, come the Australian Open, and then going into, you know, sort of Indian Wells, Miami, when he's looking to gear up towards Wimbledon again.
Well, he's a man, of course, who has won more than 100 titles, but a young woman who won her very first title this weekend was young Coco Gauff. I mean, 15 years of age, she was a lucky loser into the main draw in Linz. She beats the top seed, Kiki Bertens, along the way, and come the final against Yelena Ostapenko, who's a former French Open champion. She's able to fend off the fight back from the Latvian and come through 6-2 in the decider, Barry. And indeed, she didn't disappoint us again, did she?
No, she didn't. And I actually think this is the best thing that would have has happened to her, as opposed to maybe going to the semis of Wimbledon. I think that was kind of all too soon. But I think when you do it organically and in a smaller event, and in the manner she did, the youngest champion for 15 years, she's now top 75. She had her first top 10 win in Kiki Bertens. I think it's magic. I mean, everyone that saw her progress at Wimbledon knew that this kid was pretty special, not just her tennis, but just her personality. I think it's a magnificent achievement. And I just think it's magnificent for the tour as well. And the women's game is very, very healthy when you consider Andreescu this year, you consider Naomi Osaka, what she achieved at the end of 2017, the beginning of, last year, 2018, the beginning of this year in Australia, and now what she's been able to achieve the last couple of weeks. You got youngsters that I think those, certainly Andreescu and Osaka, they'll be able to carry the sport for many years because I think they've got that personality in different ways. They're totally different characters, aren't they? And then now Coco Gauff, I think she likes the limelight. And with her being an American, I think that's also key. You know, we do need, you know, on the men and women's side, we do need a great American as well because it's so much healthier for the sport.
It's staggering that she was 684 in the world rankings at the start of this year. And as you mentioned, now she's going to be in the top 75 in the world at the age of 15. You also used the word sort of liking being on court, liking the limelight. And I was thinking back, Nicole Vidasova, I think, was the last who was actually a bit younger to have won a first title. But she was somebody who never really enjoyed that limelight, never seemed to be particularly happy on the court. And of course, it's so important what goes on behind the scenes, the team, the support, to allow players to play in the right frame of mind.
Yeah, and she's with Tony Godsick, Federer's agent. And yeah, I mean, as you said, it is very important to have that strong team around you, strong support with her parents. From what I hear, they are a great family. And again, you know, again, we've talked about it. I think it was after Wimbledon on our podcast. There's no need to rush the amount of tournaments that she needs to play. I think the age eligibility rule, I think, is great. You know, next year she'll play a few more tournaments. She'll be a year older. She's in the top 100, so she can sort of pick her tournaments easier. She knows she's going to be in the four majors. You know, next year, this time next year, realistically, what do I think will happen? If she halves her ranking, that'll be another great year. That's the rule I follow. So 2020, she's already won one title. She can win another title, maybe go deep into one of the premier mandatory events and maybe a second week of a major. That, again, what she achieved at Wimbledon, I think that would be an incredible effort from her.
the other tour event over the past week on the WTA was in the Tianjin Open, and Rebecca Pettersson, the Swede, was able to pick up a second title. She's obviously had a very good Asian swing with those two trophies that she's managed to gather. But Heather Watson, the woman that she beat in the final, obviously Heather unable to finally get it done. However, for Heather, that's a huge plus this week over what's been a very difficult season or two for her. She hadn't even won a match apart from one at Wimbledon this year on the tour prior to going to Tianjin. So that suddenly came out of the blue and it's got her back inside the top 100. And you feel, well, you know, that's great for any player when they've been through such a struggle as she has.
Yeah, top 100 is the magic figure, really, because we're talking about Coco Gauff. Again, the same applies for Heather. Top 100 means you can get into the four majors. And she has had a very, very difficult year. But what Heather's now got to do is capitalize on this week and build on the momentum. You know, there's no point a player having one great week if you then don't do anything for a period of time. And obviously, we're ending towards the end of the season in the women's game. But that will help her off-season, won't it? That will help in terms of the motivation to really push those extra yards and you know, go down to Australia or whatever tournament she decides to play before the Australian Open in the best possible shape. I mean, there's always a positive spin, right? She's had a poor year. She's in the top 100. So what does that mean? She's got no points to defend. So she can feel that she can climb the rankings even more.
On last week's podcast, we talked with George Belshaw about some of the other Brits, of course, Dan Evans and Kyle Edmund in particular, and developments for both of those this week.
Yeah, Kyle amazingly lost in qualies in Antwerp. So defending champion, he didn't get a wild card. He didn't enter. That's a bit of an error, I think. Wanted to play because obviously his form has been poor. I mean, we talked about it last week. To me, it almost smacks that I think you just got to cut down the season. It just seems, mm-hmm. You know, he's losing more and more confidence. It's a surprise that he has had the form that he has. I just hope that he can get his form back. I mean, there was whispers, wasn't there, that he's open to going back with Freddie Rosengren. Okay. That was sort of whispers a few days ago that's what Kyle would quite like.
Because that seemed to me as a very good matchup, those two, what they were doing together, you know, for a while they were a partnership like that. And it surprised me when that finished.
Yeah, I think Kyle's got to do a lot to convince Freddie to come back. I mean, it was Freddie's decision. Mm-hmm. Freddie had had enough. Retired from the tour, didn't he? So I think Kyle needs to have top class negotiation skills to get Freddie back. As for Dan, well, he's on a trial basis with Mark Hilton again. They worked successfully initially before Dan had his ban. That was no surprise for me when I heard that. I sort of heard whispers a couple of months ago that might happen, and that was even when Hiltz was with Kyle. So I think, you know, they'll just see how it works the next few weeks and then, I guess, make a decision going into next year.
Well, looking forward to the coming week and Andy Murray continuing his bid to improve things singles-wise to try and climb back up the rankings. He still has a protected ranking going into the European Open in Antwerp. What have you made, certainly, of what he did in Shanghai and his hopes coming indoors now?
Where do we start with Shanghai? do we start with the incident with Fanini, or do we start with his tennis, Barry? What do you think?
Go where you like.
Let's start with the tennis. Good. Another positive week. I thought he played very well. It was an epic match physically and mentally. And, you know, given what he did in Beijing, where he played at a very high level, beating Berrettini. Berrettini made semis this week, so that's confirmation that he's playing well. Timu won the title in Beijing, and then to push Fanini. I think it's positive news. Hopefully, Kim won't have the baby at the beginning of the week and will have it maybe going into the week after, because then he can have a full week in Antwerp. And with it being a weaker draw, then a chance that, maybe Andy can get to the latter stages. In terms of the incident, I actually found it quite hilarious. I mean, it was a little bit handbags, wasn't it? I mean, Fanini
so.
Does that. I've seen Fanini do that before. He's always one of those players that, as commentators, he keeps us on our edge of our seats, doesn't he? That you never know what's coming next. And at the end of the day, Murray won the point, and so it was Fergus Murphy didn't need to step in. I think where I was probably surprised actually in the whole, I can understand Andy being angry because Fanini does that to you at times. He pushes you. He's like that kid in the playground, isn't he? He'll just keep prodding you. Where I was surprised with Andy was he broke and he was just about to serve the match for the second time at 6-5 in the third. And I don't think that's the time to engage in conversation with someone like Fanini, especially when you've been on court at that time, close to 3 hours. That probably was what I was surprised. But let's focus on what an amazing match it was and what a high level from Murray.
Fanini is top seed this week in Stockholm, so he's some way away from Andy Murray, who will be in Antwerp. But in terms of the race that obviously is gathering apace, and the fact that Medvedev leads the Russian charge again at the Kremlin Cup in Moscow, and a big deal there, not just for the men, but also the women. There's a whole lot in the melting pot going into the next 7 days.
Yeah, should we start with the women? Should we sort of give an update where we are? Six have qualified. Barty, Pliskova, Osaka, Halep, Andreescu, Kvitova. We've got Svitolina in seventh. We've got Serena in eighth. So those two are in pole position. I don't think Serena's going to play. Has she actually officially announced it? I mean, she as good as said she wasn't going to play. I guess she might see how she feels. But let's say that she's not going to play, because I think probably it's more likely she won't than she will. So Svitolina in seventh. And then the only two players that can make it are Bencic and Bertens. Now, Bertens lost to Goff early stages in Linz. They're all in the draw in Moscow. So it might get very interesting if all three are still going come the semi-finals. If you know, the race to Shenzhen. And then the men, six are qualified. So Tsitsipas, he booked his automatic qualification this week. And then take your pick, isn't it? Over to you, Barry. You got first pick.
So, yeah, in seventh, Zverev. Berrettini, eighth. Bautista Agut, ninth. And Goffin, tenth. Obviously, you've got Fanini as well, lurking, and Monfils, who will be the top seed in Antwerp. But this close, I still think Berrettini will make it.
Yeah,
I think he might. And I think, I mean, Zverev, despite the final loss in Shanghai, is playing a whole heap better than he was a couple of months ago. And as defending champion, I think those are still very much the two to displace. Do you think Bautista Agut's going to be there, or Goffin?
I said at the beginning of the week in Shanghai, I thought Zverev and Goffin. And Goffin played well against Federer, but that was a tough loss. He was a better player. Didn't play his best tennis when the going was getting tough. I hope that doesn't derail him. I don't think it will, because he's playing in Antwerp this week. So I'm going to go with Zverev and Goffin. Obviously, you can sound from my voice that there's not a lot of conviction. I wouldn't rule out Isner. I think Isner's one of those very dangerous ones, but I think he's probably too far back now.
Well, he's 15th at the moment, but when you look at, I mean, in my maths, let's work this out, he is about 810 points behind Berrettini. So it's certainly not out of the question.
I think we're sort of presuming if those guys don't do well in Paris. And I think, you know, if you look at Zverev, Berrettini, Bautista, Agut, Goffin, Fanini, Nishikori, if he's back, one or two of those is going to be making quarterfinals, you would have thought, wouldn't you?
I think so. But I didn't say it with any great conviction. Well, Baz, that's pretty much rounding up where we are at the moment. Obviously, a lot to look forward to over the next few days, and a lot for us, no doubt, to talk about in a week's time. Thanks, everybody, for joining in this one. And we'll be back, as I say, after Antwerp, Moscow, and Stockholm. Look forward to it. Join us then.